This is Global Patriot Radio.
Hey, welcome to the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al, starring the godfather of Global Patriot Radio, the dawn of dissenting discussion, the Italian infidel himself, Vito Esposito. Him and his hitman, Big Al, are here to whack the leftists, shake down the Democrats, and put out a contract on all the jihadis that are messing with the American family. And if you got what it takes to be a wise guy, you can get made right here on the show by dialing 319-527-6706. So, get ready to go to the mattresses and say, Mamma Mia, no Sharia, because Vito and Big Al are going to give you a radio show you can't refuse.
Welcome to the Vito Esposito Show. Vito's not in today. He's got some family commitments. This is Alan filling in, and it is great to be here. I am right where I'm supposed to be, and you are too. And I'd like to start off with just a little saying that I like. I ask for strength, and God gave me difficulties to make me strong. I asked for wisdom. God gave me problems to solve. I asked for prosperity. God gave me a brain and energy to work. I asked for courage, and God gave me danger to overcome. I asked for love, and God gave me troubled people to help. I asked for favors, and God gave me opportunities. I received nothing I wanted, but I received everything I needed. For me, the important part of that is I received nothing I wanted. I received everything I needed. So much to say in that, and so much about how we live our lives. But anyway, welcome. Hope everybody had a great week. It's been an exciting week, and we're going to delve into what's happening in the current events, and we want to hear from you. Our call-in phone number is 319-527-6706. That's area code 319-527-6706. So you can talk about what's on your mind, because we have a full plate and only 2 hours to get through all of it. May not be enough time, so I hope you call in. Foot, Bigfoot, great to see you in the chat room. And so let's get right into it. The Pebble Beach Pro-Am, all you golf fans, fantastic four-day event. And congrats to Tom Hogue beating Jordan Spieth by 2 strokes. Tom Hogue, a solid closer, but Jordan Spieth had 1 hiccup. And what a cliffhanger, literally. He had a shot right literally on the edge of a cliff. The crowd was silent. A lot of ajna from the talking heads going, oh, he should have taken the they should have played it unliable and unplayable and then move the ball, but he didn't do it. Jordan Spieth on the edge of a 350-foot cliff went ahead and made the shot, made par. Very exciting as always. Let's see what else we got. Oh, the Washington Redskins are now the Washington Commanders. Political correctness is in our football for sure. The Redskins are now the Commanders. Who comes up with these names? Washington. What the hell does that mean? And what's wrong with the Redskins? Redskins have been their name for years. The Atlanta Braves never changed their name. Nobody changed their name. I mean, a lot of them did, but the Atlanta Braves, it was great. You got the Tom Brady retires. Big news, very big news. He's going to spend time with his supermodel wife, Giselle, and their 3 kids. And will he be able to stay away? He's a GOAT. That's the greatest of all time. One of the greatest quarterbacks. He's a great quarterback with the Patriots. Took them to the Super Bowl. Took Tampa Bay Buccaneers to the Super Bowl. That is a great feat. So we wish Tom Brady the best in his retirement. And then also in another golf story, Bryson DeChambeau, he was offered $135 million to join the Saudi Super Golf League. Yes, there is such a thing. The Saudis are competing or wanting to compete with the PGA by offering the PGA's top players loads of cash. And in the case of Bryson DeChambeau, they're going to offer him $135 million rumored. Bryson DeChambeau said that that's not true, that that is false. But I'm sure that they made an offer to him somewhere, and if it's in the $135 million range. Now, why this is a big decision is that if you can't play in, according to the PGA rules, you can't play in both leagues. So you got to make a choice. So if Bryson DeChambeau goes to the Saudi Arabian Super Golf League, his new nickname will be Bryson Kufar of the Desert Course DeChambeau, and guaranteed to make the Saudi Arabians excited. And I don't believe there's any Saudi Arabians that are on the PGA Tour as it is, but they have lots of money and lots of golf courses, and they may be able to compete with the PGA. Some of the PGA players are not real happy with the PGA's heavy hand, the Professional Golf Association, their heavy hand over the players and the money they take. And a great example of that is Phil Mickelson, who was upset he wanted to get a picture from one of the tournaments, and he had to pay the PGA in order to get a picture of himself at one of the PGA tournaments that he was playing in. That really torqued him, as it should, because I mean, it just looks bad, and it's bad form, and it's nickel and diming these guys, and Phil Mickelson doesn't need it. So we'll see where that goes. And then racism and the Miami Dolphins. It's not what race you are, but how you identify is how the story is playing out. So what we have is the Miami Dolphins. They hired San Francisco 49ers offensive coordinator Mike McDaniel as the organization's next head coach, making him the fourth minority coach currently at the helm of the NFL team. The 38-year-old, who identifies as multiracial, joins Washington Commanders Ron Rivera, the Pittsburgh Steelers Mike Tomlin, and the New York Jets Robert Saleh as the only minority head coaches in the 32-team league. McDaniels is the first minority hire in the current head coaching cycle. Now, if you take a look at a picture of McDaniel, he says he's multiracial, but we don't really know what these multi-races are. Because he looks like, well, he could be Hispanic maybe, or white, but definitely probably leaning more towards the Hispanic. He does not look black, but he defines himself as multiracial. Well, McDaniel's hiring follows a turbulent week for the Dolphins, where the team's former head coach, Brian Flores, and this is where the problem started, with Brian Flores, he filed a suit against the organization. Now, Flores, who is black, is suing the Dolphins and two other teams in the league, alleging racist hiring practices and racial discrimination. Flores also said the Dolphins owner, Stephen Rice, offered the then-first-year head coach $100,000 for every loss as part of an alleged effort to obtain the first pick in the NFL draft. Ross has since issued a statement calling Flores's claim false, malicious, and defamatory. Now, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, who screws up everything he touches lately, issued a memo over the weekend calling the lack of diversity among head coaches league-wide unacceptable amid the Flores controversy. The commissioner, Roger Goodell, said over the weekend he's calling the lack of diversity among head coaches league-wide unacceptable. A head coach, or any coach for that matter, should be hired because of their skill, because of their resume, their win-loss record, what the players think of the said individual. Diversity among head coaches league-wide is unacceptable, amid the Flores controversy when you have the hiring of others who are now multiracial, which isn't racial enough because they're not black. And this is something I learned today when I was listening to Sirius Radio, and I went to one of the black talk stations, and they were talking about exactly this subject. And they were talking about, it's what you identify, Alan Carr is the guy's name, talking about, it's how you identify your race is determinant of your race. He went on to explain how he is from one white parent and one black parent, so he's a lighter-skinned black. His brother, the same, he came out even lighter, and everyone thinks that he's white, but he is black. And they have discussions among the family, among the brothers. He says his brother's a pain in the ass, but that's okay, they're brothers. But the brother identifies himself as white or doesn't identify himself at all. The brother told Alan Carr, he said, I can tell people that I'm black, but they're going to think that I'm white anyway because I'm so white. So I just go through life as a white person. So it all becomes, technically he's black. They both come from a black father and a white mother, I believe. But either way, it's a race. They come from a mixed family. Now, you would think that a mixed family would be the end of racism, because if you're half white, you're half black, you're not white, but you're of mixed race, so it kind of makes it tough to be racist when you're of mixed race. I'm a big fan of mixed marriages, by the way. Now, it makes no sense. The racial lines are being blurred over time as mixed marriages happen frequently, accepted everywhere. I don't know of anybody who gets upset when they see a black and white. Well, now it didn't used to be that way. Maybe 30 years ago, it was an unusual sight and tend to cause much agita within that family. Society didn't quite wrap their head around mixed marriages, but things have changed in the last 30 years. Now nobody cares. I mean, some people do. The black separatists care. The white separatists care. But the general population, people like you and me, no one cares. So what? Mixed marriage. Big deal. That means that the racial lines are being blurred. And this is causing much grief for people who don't want the racial lines to be blurred. And in this case, it's Flores. Now, the NFL commissioner, Goodell, issued a memo, and that's where calling for the lack of diversity among head coaches league-wide unacceptable, because what's the definition of a lack of diversity? This Mark McDaniel describes himself as being multiracial. Does he fit that role? I don't know. Does someone who's half black, half white fit that role? Tiger Woods, Asian, black. Does that take anything away from a person's skill and ability at a game or a job or making it through the military? It should make zero difference whatsoever. Now, we've made significant efforts to promote diversity and adopted numerous policies and programs which produce positive changes in many areas. However, we must acknowledge that particularly with respect to head coaches, the results have been unacceptable, Goodell. So let me tell you what's unacceptable, Roger Goodell. What's unacceptable is when you have NFL players taking a knee. You have NFL players not standing putting their hand over their heart for the national anthem, showing disrespect for the United States of America, showing disrespect to our flag and country that you allowed to happen. That, to me, is unacceptable. That's why I haven't really watched NFL football for the last couple of years. Until the playoffs, this is the first time that I started watching football was during the playoffs, which, by the way, were fantastic. But now all this racial crap is starting to pop its head again. Roger Goodell is making it worse, and I guess that this is filtering throughout all of our society. Now, the multiracial McDaniel, he spent 15 seasons in the NFL and has a long resume. The 49ers will receive two draft picks as part of the Rooney Rule for developing a minority assistant coach who then earned a head coaching position. The Rooney Rule was introduced in 2003, initially requiring teams to interview at least one diverse candidate during a head coaching vacancy. Now, this Rooney Rule is what got Flores all pissed off, because he went into an interview, said that he was disrespected at the interview with the Giants. However, the Rooney Rule forces teams to interview at least one diverse candidate. What's a diverse candidate? A black person, an Asian person? I don't see too many Asian people playing football. So it must be a black person. Now, is it half black, half white person? Are they multiracial people? What falls as a diverse? What's the definition of a diverse candidate? Because I don't know. All I know is that it's bad for football. It's bad for people who excel at their sport to be able to make it at that level. It takes an unusual amount of skill and luck that you don't blow out your knees between high school, college, and then making it to the pros. And then once you make it to the pros, to be able to elevate your career into that top tier. It doesn't happen every day. It takes a special person with a special talent. So that's it in sports, and I'm sure that Hank will be talking about this, because this is a Hank Polysports, and I'm sure that he will be talking about this as the week moves on, because this story is the definition of politics intersecting sport. Very fascinating stuff. To go into more detail on it, but there's a lot of other stories in the news that we're going to get to. And the first one is the Freedom Truck Convoy was called a cult. Can you believe that? This is what's happening in Colorado. And who would think that Bill Maher, a liberal for the most part, has been nailing this. He's been nailing this. Bill Maher, Washington Post and MSNBC trashed the Canadian truckers participating in the Freedom Convoy, traveling across the country to protest vaccine mandates for cross-border truck drivers, as well as the Liberal government's coronavirus restrictions. That would be Canada. And then in order for truckers to bring goods into Canada, they have a mandate that you have to be vaccinated and to be able to show proof. Now, the convoy, made up of hundreds of big rig trucks, left Vancouver, British Columbia on January 23rd and traveled to Ottawa on Saturday, where they were joined by thousands of other citizens in protesting Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's pandemic policy. The Freedom Convoy bans mainstream media from first press conference. They call that sabotage. Well, it's a cult. Yes, it is a cult, declared MSNBC's Joe Scarborough, co-host of the Liberal Network's flagship morning show, Morning Joe, after his co-host and main squeeze, Mika Brzezinski, painted the protesters as violent vandals and criminals. She noted one report claiming a group of protesters demanded food from an Ottawa soup kitchen for the homeless because they wouldn't wear masks to be able to order food in a restaurant. That seems like an interesting way to spend your weekend, Scarborough quipped. So these anti-vaxxers actually took food from the mouths of the homeless because they're so put upon. I'm just curious again, where were these protesters when people were required to get 5 vaccines to start school? I'm just curious again. Where were these protesters when people were required to get the 5 vaccines to start school? Where were these protesters when people were requiring to give their children 5 vaccines? They were in the doctor's office getting vaccines. And they were making fun of left-wingers on the West Coast for being loopy anti-vaxxers. Now they have met the enemy, and the enemy, their enemy, is themselves, because they become what they hated. They become what they mocked, he added, appeared increasingly frustrated. And now they're taking food from soup kitchens because they're so put upon for being asked to do what they've been asked to do, required to do their entire lives. It is a cult. Yes, it is, Brzezinski agreed. Meanwhile, Canadian PM Justice Trudeau tests positive for COVID. And days earlier, the Washington Post liberal political cartoonist Michael Natter tweeted a cartoon depicting a number of truckers driving with the words fascism emblazoned on the side of trucks, referring to those participating in the protests as supporters of the far-right ideology. Well, Natter was heavily lampooned by critics for his heavy-handed take, drawing comparisons to a previous incident in which he was fired from a Canadian publisher for a cartoon that went viral. In that piece, he depicted former President Trump mocking the tragic drowning deaths of two illegal immigrants attempting to cross the Rio. Well, so here are these truckers. They're calling them a cult, and all because they want to be able to drive freely with their truck and not have to show, not have to mask up and wear and show proof of vaccination. Well, for 2 years, this has been going on. For 2 years, the unvaxxed have been shamed, have been called murderers, have been called, you're killing your family. And now after 2 years, what we've learned is that everything we've been told has been a lie or wrong. We were told by President Biden himself that if you took the vaccine, you would be immune from the coronavirus. Just like if you took the polio vaccine, you'd be immune from polio or any of the other vaccines. This ended up not being true. Once you took the COVID shot, or the jab, as we like to call it, you could still contract COVID and pass it on to other people. The benefit is that, well, perhaps your symptoms may not be as bad, and you won't have to go to the hospital. And you'll get through it much easier. That may very well be true. So the jab is actually a prophylactic, meaning all it does is it lessens your symptoms. Now, if you're unvaccinated, you can still catch the COVID, and you can still transmit it to other people. There, when you look at it logically, there is no difference between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. When you look at it at that level, we're also learning from the CDC that masks don't work. We've been saying, Vito and I have been saying on this program, is that a virus, any virus, the size of it is like 0.1 to 0.2 microns small. The paper masks obviously don't work because they can't stop anything smaller than dust particles. So a virus can go right through, they're ineffective. Even up to the N95 mask, which is probably about the best, but that also will not stop a virus, so they just don't work. Period. So now you've got this vaccine that doesn't work, so now you have to take the booster. So if you've got your first vaccine card, well, that was good then. Then you could hop on a plane. You could go to a sporting event. You could go to a restaurant, depending on where you live, if you don't live in Florida or one of the other free states. But if you're in New York or San Francisco, anywhere in California, then you're kind of screwed. Or if you're where these truckers are, if you have to wear a mask to go into somewhere to get something to eat, and if you don't want to wear a mask, you don't go in and eat because it's mandated by the government, and they're forcing these private citizens to go ahead and do what needs to be done. So they're using these private entities to go ahead and execute these mandates, which is very, very, very wrong. In fact, so where do we go from here? So I support this Freedom Truck Rally. I think it's a wake-up call. I think it's a wake-up call to Canadians saying, we're fighting back. We're not going to take it anymore. They're showing resistance. And everybody should show resistance, where if you don't want to wear a mask, then don't wear the mask. It doesn't work. The CDC guideline said it does not work. Period. You can say no. It's hard, but you can say no, I'm not wearing this mask. You may get kicked out of somewhere. But the resistance is key, and you can resist. I encourage you to resist, because there are a lot of people out there that think even worse. And there's things happening that I never thought that I would ever have to report on doing this show. Vito and I have been doing this show for almost 10 years now. But this is a scary story that a Democrat rep calls for quarantine to observe those refusing vaccines. In Villa Park, Illinois, Villa Park State Rep Deb Conroy, a Democrat, wants to isolate or quarantine persons who are unable or unwilling to receive vaccines, medications, or other treatments. Let me read that again. She wants the government to isolate or quarantine persons who are unable or unwilling to receive vaccines, medications, or other treatments. She wants the unvaccinated to be quarantined from everyone else in the general population. She wants them taken out of circulation. She believes this so strongly. HB 4640 is scheduled to be heard in the Illinois Human Services Committee February 2nd at 9 a.m. Now, HB 4640, were to become law, persons exposed to an infectious disease could be placed under public health department observation, only possible in a contained atmosphere with department watch guards, some suggest, such as a concentration camp. The bill says, quote, to prevent the spread of a dangerously contagious or infectious disease, the public health department may, pursuant to the provisions of subsection C of this section, isolate or quarantine persons whose refusal to undergo observation and monitoring results in uncertainty regarding whether he or she has been exposed or is infected with a dangerously contagious or infectious disease or otherwise poses a danger to the public's health. HB 4640 would also set up a state network data collection system for persons that have received mandated vaccines, medications, or otherwise. Conroy's measure is to be heard this week. Over 3,000 witness slips opposing the bill have been filed as of Monday afternoon, and we haven't heard back yet. But this should scare the crap out of each and every one of you. Maybe not for the COVID or any of the variants. But if she's floating this trial balloon, this Marxist Democrat piece of garbage, fascist, to prevent, and it's worded in such a way that if there was another disease like a COVID or some other virus to come around, whether it's man-made or naturally existing. This is called a red flag. This is a trial balloon on what the government will be able to do. Now, if you are the government, and I always thought that people like this Illinois state rep, were few and far between, and actually so far on the fringe that people who think like this would never take these views and make them public, much less put a bill out there to make this happen. But this is where we're going in this society. Nobody's talking about it. Everybody's talking about something else. But think about this, and this is not her words. This is an Illinois state rep presenting a bill, and that if this bill should pass, it would be a benchmark for the other states. To prevent the spread of a dangerously contagious infectious disease, wide open. It could be anything. Anything that's defined by the CDC is a dangerously contagious or infectious disease. We don't know what that is. The public health department may, pursuant to the provisions of subsection C of the section, isolate or quarantine persons whose refusal to undergo observation and monitoring results in uncertainty regarding whether he or she has been exposed to or is infected with a dangerously contagious or infectious disease or otherwise poses a danger to the public health. Well, I can tell you for a fact, and so can other people, whether you're vaccinated or not, but the war against the unvaccinated, does that ring a bell? That was our president. We are fighting a war against the unvaccinated. The unvaccinated have been separated out as evil. The unvaccinated were told that they are potentially murderers. The unvaccinated were told that if they remain unvaccinated, they could be killing their family members. Families have been split up over this, and I know a couple, including mine. To give you an example, over Thanksgiving, which I didn't go to last year for other reasons, but my nephew, who is unvaccinated, didn't mention to the rest of my family that he was unvaccinated, and when that came up at the Thanksgiving, they literally masked him up, shoved him in a corner, and he did not interact with the rest of the family, according to reports, for the rest of the Thanksgiving. He was like a pariah. It became a problem to have this unvaccinated human in this family function. So it is real. I have another friend, same thing with his brother's boyfriend. Brother's husband, they're both their families, him and his brother, they don't even see each other because one is unvaccinated, one's not. So this is real and scary and should concern everybody because it's not speculation, it's not conspiracy theory, it is real life, HB 4640. So, Representative Deb Conroy, if you want to reach her, you can reach her at her Springfield office, and that phone number is 217-782-8158. Or if you want to go to her district office at Villa Park, Illinois, you can reach her at 630-415-3520. That's 630-415-3520. Her name is Representative Deb Conroy. Whether this thing is successful or not, which I hope it fails in miraculous fashion, this Deb Conroy is a Marxist. She is a fascist. She's what our founding fathers knew humans, us people, were capable of being. He knew that our republic was susceptible to people like this. And that's where these checks and balances come in, but even those have been tested as of late. So let this story soak in. That's Representative Deb Conroy, 46th District, Springfield, Illinois. Dangerous. Give her a call. Let her know how you feel. Ask her about this bill that she's pursuing, what she's going to do if it fails, and why she's doing it. What is possessing her to want to put people, lock them away into a camp if they don't follow such guidelines as the CDC says? Because we've seen where the CDC is wrong. The CDC has been wrong all along with COVID. It's been wrong since the London School put out their first paper stating that literally tens of millions of people were going to die from this COVID. never happened. In fact, many of the deaths of COVID could have been because of comorbidities. And what we're seeing, too, is that even now with Moderna, the CDC is saying that this myocarditis as a side effect is real, and it is happening with these vaccines. You know, myocarditis is a weakening of the heart, very serious condition. I assume it's rare. I hear stories of it happening a lot within my particular circle. I have not seen it. That doesn't mean that it's not happening. So think about it. I mean, if it scares you, give me a call. Let's talk about it. There's a lot going on. Also, take a short break and welcome Golf Dogs, Duck, Bigfoot in the chat room. If you want to call in, the phone number is 319-527-6706. Now, there's also other good news that in New Hampshire, there's a move to make ivermectin available to the public. How about that? That's almost the exact opposite of the other story. This story published at WorldNet Daily News Center. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration posted pages of detailed information online why you should not use ivermectin to treat or prevent COVID-19. Anyone who mentioned ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine were removed from social media, removed from Facebook, Twitter. They were shamed. Ivermectin, a horse tranquilizer, even though both of these drugs, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, have been around and used and they are FDA approved. But the big problem is that President Trump mentioned them and he used them as a prophylactic. Now, the ivermectin and the COVID-19, they don't cure COVID or any disease like that, but they do lessen the impact of this particular virus. Now, the federal agency insists it's dangerous, even though it's been prescribed for years for various parasitic ailments. And the FDA warns that overdosing on it can cause nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, hypertension, low blood pressure, allergic reactions, itching and hives, dizziness, ataxia, problems with your balance, seizures, coma, and even death. There's even, though, Dr. Teresa Lowry, a UK medical doctor and research analyst who founded the British Ivermectin Recommendation Development Initiative, BIRD, suggested it has significant benefits against contracting or dying from COVID-19, just like as we have learned what the vaccine does. Now a report confirms officials in one state are trying to make it easier for consumers to obtain, even though the FDA stands by its dire warnings. The report said lawmakers in New Hampshire are working on legislation that would give consumers access to the treatment through ordinary procedures at a pharmacy. House Bill 1022 would allow pharmacists to dispense the drug by means of standing orders, the report said. So you go to your pharmacist, the state mandates that they can dispense the drug if you want it, and you can go and get it. Now, my experience, I've got ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, I've got Z-Pax, I've got all the vitamins. Just as prudent to have an inventory, should I need it, or one of my friends may need it and can't get their hands on it, which happened too, by the way, and gave them ivermectin and ended up, took it late in the game. He's older, and his oxygen levels went down to 82 or 83, his wife told me. So I got him the ivermectin that I had in inventory because he needed it then and there. And he took it, and then after 48 hours, his oxygen levels went up. He did not have to go to the hospital. He began feeling better very, very quickly. And long story short, he ended up not having to go to the hospital, had a full recovery. Now, here's the problem. If he had gone to the hospital, this is where we're hearing a lot of the deaths. They were the hospitals, because I've got a tenant who works in the hospitals, and I asked him, just out of curiosity, I said, if I was in the hospital with COVID, and one of my family members, my wife, comes in and says, can you please give him this ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, if I was on death's bed, I was looking really bad, there didn't see any signs of recovery, and my tenant said, no, it's against protocol and procedures for the hospital to administer these drugs even for this sickness, even though they are FDA approved. And I said, so that means that that person would die without even getting it. He said, yeah. That was that. So what that told me is that a lot of these deaths, because the protocols that they're giving is remdesivir, and that has been proven not to be effective and could make matters worse for somebody, because the lung problems will get worse rather than better on the protocols from the hospital. Some people are saying that the hospitals, without trying these other drugs, this ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, the Z-Pax, et cetera, and prednisone and all that, is that people are dying from lack of treatment outside of the CDC and government-mandated protocols. I'm sure that this will come out later, because it's a horrible, horrible thing. The lawmakers are proposing that nothing on the information sheet shall discourage the recipient from using ivermectin for the treatment of COVID-19. Newsweek noted Republican State Rep. Leah Cushman, see, Republicans versus Democrat, huge difference between our two parties. In some respects, this fellow Schweitzer put out an article that people who are under Chinese influence are going to get into a little bit later, that kind of blurs this line. But Republican State Rep. Leah Cushman, a sponsor of the bill and a registered nurse, told Newsweek that she wanted to make sure residents of the state have options for treatment of COVID-19. She also said the burden of the virus on hospitals needs to be curbed. And right now there are no early treatments being offered by most doctors. Excuse me. A commentary at the Gateway Pundit noted under the law, ivermectin sold to consumers to use against COVID-19 would be, quote, regarded as being issued for a legitimate medical purpose in the usual course of professional practice, close quote. Now, the wording of this is so much different than the fascist Marxists from Illinois, which they want government to have full control if there is a quote-unquote pandemic. The government takes full control. The Republican says no. Regarded as being issued for a legitimate medical purpose in the usual course of professional practice. When a related plan was proposed in Virginia, Democrats shut down a public comment period and ordered police to remove citizens. These are what Marxists do. Democrat Marxists. Don't call them liberals. I call them Marxists. I call them Democrat Marxists. They are not, well, they're kind of communists, but Marxist is worse. They're not liberals. They're not progressives. Definitely not progressives. They're the opposite of being progressive. These Democrats are Marxists. And after a 9-6 party line vote there, Senator Louise Lucas banged her gavel and ordered police officers to remove the doctors, family members of COVID patients, and others who came to speak in favor of the bill. Doctors. Doctors know about this because they're doctors. The sponsor of the plan, Republican State Senator Amanda Chase, another Republican, told National File that Democrats will legalize marijuana but prohibit the use of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine for the treatment of COVID in a right to try state like Virginia. If Virginians are going to be given the right to try marijuana, then give them the right to try life-saving ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, she said. The National File noted that after the vote, the committee chairman, Lucas, posted a video on Twitter in which she vowed to form a Democratic brick wall that will throw Republican bills in the trash. She illustrated her declaration by crumpling up the piece of paper and tossing it aside. Committee chairman. She went on to say, as president of the Virginia Senate, I have a plan to do what to do with any bills that would roll back our progress. Sir, rolling back our progress is ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. And you got to understand, with the variants that have come up, this ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine could still be used. It may not be as effective with the variants. Still it's still being held back. And according to this politician, roll back our progress. So what does she see as progress? She sees progress is that any voices that are opposite of what she believes or the CDC believes to be true is dangerous. And that includes FDA drugs that have been approved and have a proven success rate, at least in this case. So these Virginia Democrats, as they block life-saving ivermectin treatments, and then they kill public comments on it because they don't even want to debate. It's kind of like with Joe Rogan, who's now getting censored by Spotify because the Democrats... Well, not even the Democrats. Spotify. Joe Rogan is a podcaster. He's also a commentator for Ultimate Fighting. He's very good at what he does. His podcast is one of the top podcasts in the country. Spotify paid him a lot of money, signed a contract to have him on Spotify and do his podcast because he has literally millions of listeners. He's one of the most listened to podcasts in the country. So what happened, some Marxists found where he used some video of the N-word a couple of times, and I've listened to his podcast. I've never really heard him. I never heard that. I don't think it's frequent. I don't think it's as frequent as Joy Reid using horrible language or Maxine Waters, incitement to violence. Not to say that one equals the other. It's just nothing happened to them, but for Joe Rogan, he must be silenced, destroyed, reputation destroyed, means of making a living completely wiped out. They want to destroy this man. And that's what they do with voices on the right. And we're seeing it happen now as we speak. So Neil Young... Great. I'm a big Neil Young fan, always have been. His Decade album is fantastic. Well, he said, I am not going to be on Spotify with Joe Rogan, therefore take all of my music off of Spotify. It's either Joe Rogan or me. Spotify took Neil Young off of Spotify. And then a few other talent did the same thing. Democrats, I guess the latest one is Crosby, Nash & Young. But he's a real piece of garbage. Great musician, great talent. Don't get me wrong. I love CSNMY, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, or Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I love their music. But what he did is he sold rights to his music to a third party. The third party put him up on Spotify, and then this piece of garbage, Crosby, got on and said, well, Spotify can take all of my music down, which he didn't even own. That is what a Marxist does. He's destroying the revenue-making stream of the person who bought at an agreed price whatever content from Crosby that he had. That paints a little picture you may not have heard about who these people are, how they operate, how they think. And they're despicable. Well, we got a caller. Let's see. Hey there. Welcome. With the Viking. Well, let me find it. How are you, Holger?
I'm good. Kind of hard to run a show all by yourself there, isn't it?
Tell me about it. I need two extra hands.
How you doing, man?
I am doing terrific. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm enjoying the show. I did have a comment on the whole treatment side of the COVID. I related to your question about if you're in the hospital with COVID and it's not going well, and your family comes in and says, hey, we want you to try this and this, and ivermectin, hydroxy, and all that kind of good stuff. I know damn well they'll never do it, but the thing, I guess my opinion is this, is that, at some point in time, somebody's got to dig into this and trace back exactly where the directives came about, basically banning the use of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine for the treatment. Because that's the issue. I mean, I can understand the medical community. I mean, let's face it. I mean, if you're my buddy, Al, and you're in the hospital and you've got, you've got some sort of heart condition and the treatment's just that they're struggling with it. I mean, for me to walk in and say, I was reading on, this website that if you use, honey mixed with molasses, I mean, obviously. I mean, they're not going to be, even if it's FDA approved, I mean, it's, those people in those hospitals are, if basically they're looking at something saying, hey, you are not to be using these medications for the treatment of COVID, that's not their fault. But I want to know is who put the kibosh on it.
Well, I remember when President Trump mentioned, when he was in the hospital with COVID, he mentioned ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And the minute that he mentioned it, then all the shit hit the fan, and they became the worst things on planet Earth.
Well, yeah, and that's how it started, and that was the. But what I'm saying is this: is it seems to me that the medical research community is not the ones that did all this testing and they said, okay, well, antibiotics don't work on it, okay, so don't use antibiotics. And they didn't test ivermectin and say, oh, don't use ivermectin because it's, could make things worse or it doesn't work and all that kind of stuff. Somebody in the government started that. And if you determine where that came from, if it came from the CDC, if it came from the National Institute of Health, where it came from, that's how you get it resolved, because that's when you can go to the medical community and say, since when are you guys governed by this kind of an effort and so forth? And, I mean, that's what needs to be uncovered because, I think that's kind of the issue. I mean, you're talking about a doctor and a patient relationship, and, that doctor, even though he's covered by malpractice and stuff, I mean, he's, if you walked in and said, hey, Holger needs ivermectin, and you decide to be a kind soul and give it a shot, and it doesn't work, and I croak, well, he's going to be up shit creek without a paddle, because he basically is breaking the protocols.
Right.
So I think it's not fair to blame. I don't think it's fair to blame the medical community at our level, but the fact that politics can affect the treatment of human beings in this country that's the scary part.
Yeah, especially with that bill if the next pandemic, if that bill goes through from the state politician from Illinois, where the government will determine how that is treated, somewhat like what's happening with COVID, and that with the CDC protocols and liability from the hospitals, it's a scary thought. Yeah, because you're not going to test store and someone comes in with ivermectin, the doctor also has he's obligated the Hippocratic Oath of do no harm. And maybe he thinks, well, God, they're going to die anyway. Let's give them this ivermectin. It's FDA approved. Let's see what happens. But he can't do it. But some do. I don't know. It's a great question. It's a great question that needs to be answered, because after this COVID and the variants go into the rearview mirror, which hopefully they will. It's been, 2 years now? Something will come down the road within the next year or two or five. It's not a matter of if, just when. And then how do we handle it as a country? It's a very important
And that's the great point, because, you know, we've seen this whole involvement in the government in healthcare. And let's face it, you know, we don't have one payer frickin' healthcare yet, okay? And so that healthcare system is not governed, you know, by, you know, the tyrannical federal government stuff. But they've been involved in this from the get-go. I mean, this is with, you know, with the reimbursements to the hospitals for COVID care and stuff. I mean, this is how the reporting got all fucked up, Al. You know, because, you know, literally if a patient died of COVID, the hospital made a bundle of money. If they reported it as a death by pneumonia, they didn't get nothing.
Right. Or a car accident, or a motorcycle accident.
Yeah. You can imagine how far they could take that. I mean, the next time around, it could be, you know, we'll give you an extra $5,000 for each patient that you literally manufacture the death coming from this, you know?
So who's the beneficiary? Anyway. When that happens, who do you think is the beneficiary? Meaning with the CDC protocols? With the CDC protocols, who is the beneficiary?
Well, I don't know. It's probably the pocketbooks of the people in the CDC.
Yep. Or the producers of Pfizer and Moderna.
Yeah, of the vaccines. Yep, absolutely.
Right. So if I work for Pfizer or Moderna, and I'm the president, and I'm looking at a huge contract from the government for millions of doses of this vaccine for COVID, what could possibly derail that huge order? We're talking literally could be billions of dollars. Could that stupid little drug ivermectin for, I don't know, a few pennies a pill, or this hydroxychloroquine, or you put that together with a Z-Pak, with prednisone, if you're having breathing issues and everything else that's on the market, and you know that those would be able to do the same thing or better than the vaccine, that's your biggest fear. So what do you do?
Well, the bottom line, Pfizer or Moderna. Yeah, the bottom line is that, you know, technically, I mean, if you're in court, you could make the case that, you know, they can't be a beneficiary if the vaccine doesn't keep you from catching it, and if the vaccine doesn't keep you out of the hospital, then there can't be a beneficiary relationship there, because it's not a treatment. It's a preventive measure,
right,
but it's not 100% effective. So, I mean, you're talking apples and oranges here. But you're exactly right.
Yeah. But, you know, what's weird is there hasn't been one government hearing yet on the virus, where it came from.
No.
I mean, a real
absolutely
government
not.
With discovery, a special counsel being called, where they have subpoena powers and discovery to get information from Pfizer and Moderna, between the CDC, between these Democrat politicians and the CDC and Pfizer and Moderna. That's what I'd like to see. What is the relationship between those three? Even the Republicans in there, too, because they may have their fingers in it, too, which wouldn't surprise me after that Schweitzer report that came out tying a lot of these Republicans to Chinese. I don't know if you saw that about the Chinese money over the years. That's pretty exciting. So, yeah, that's what I want to see. I want to see discovery, but there hasn't – for some reason, there hasn't been a special counsel called, either by the Republicans or the Democrats, which is odd after 2 years. You would think that would be one of the first things that the people would demand, since this is impacting literally everybody in the nation 5 years now, 5 years and older.
Well, you know, bottom line is they've spent 100 times more time and energy in researching, you know, what time, you know, Donald Trump took a dump on the 6th of January than they have on a pandemic that was released that's killed, you know, whatever, 5 million people worldwide. You know, I mean, that just goes to show you how sheep-like the people are in this country. You know,
and
if this is going to happen again in next year, the new thing comes out or whatever, you know, 2024 election's coming up. Oh, God, we got a new one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, at some point in time, the American people, you have to stand up and say, okay, you know, show us how this happened. And if you don't show us, then we're just going to withhold our money. You're not going to get a dime from us until you come clean.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people are just, you know, are just like sheep now. They just, you know, it just boggles my mind. After all of failures, over all of the centuries of federal government interaction with the people of this country, I'm amazed at the level of trust that people still have. It's just mind-boggling to me. No.
Well, and what they're doing, what the people are doing, and a great example of it was happened yesterday with Georgia Governor, who's running for Georgia Governor, Stacey Abrams. She went and had a photo op at a school, and she was – you probably saw the picture. I don't know, but she was up front and center with 25 kids maybe behind her, all masked up, and she was not. This is the Democrat woman running for governor of Georgia again. And nobody said – really, she's catching some grief for being a hypocrite, but it didn't wake anybody up at all, I don't think. And it tells me that people, like you said, they're sheep. Not only are they sheep, but they are sheep with attitudes. And their attitudes, they have no problem going after the unvaccinated or any of the people who speak like we do, looking at everything that's happening and going, well, I got a question on the ivermectin and the hydroxychloroquine. Explain. I just have a question on it. It's not making sense. Or this vaccine, why was it sold? How it was sold never happened. These questions are legitimate, but if we ask them, or if we choose not to get vaccinated, we become literally dangerous to the community, worthy of being isolated and put into taken out of circulation as a threat to the community. And people would go along with it. That's what scares me. I am convinced that now people, the majority of people, would go along with it.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you there, that's for sure. Say, just to change things with you, there's a story out that you know, might be worth you and Vito, you know, checking into for next week. But there was an article out at Slate.com, which I typically don't read because it's an uber left site and all that.
Yeah.
But hold on a second here. The headline is San Jose's new gun law is the first of its kind. Okay.
Okay.
And I knew that I was going to lose my spot if I did that. Damn it. Hold on, give me a second here. But anyway, what they've done is they have San Jose, California decided that they were going to, you know, try and clean up the gun, this whole gun violence thing and all that kind of good stuff. So they've passed an ordinance now that, you know, if you're a gun owner, you have to carry certain liability insurance and so forth and property insurance because you're a gun owner, okay? Then they also passed an ordinance where you have to pay a fee of $25 each year as a gun owner, basically to this common fund, so that money can be used to lessen the effects of gun violence. Okay? So no other citizens have to pay the $25 fee and all that kind of good stuff. And I don't know if you heard about this or not, but
no,
what I wanted to point out is this. Damn it. Should have never moved my... Because it's basically the article is where the guy from the city is being interviewed by the journalist. And then he goes into all these answers and stuff. And hold on a second. Let me just find it here.
Well, kind of like, so what you're saying, like someone owns four guns, which is not unusual. You could own a handgun for self-defense. You have a shotgun because you like to go trap shooting or hunting. And then you have a rifle for long-distance shooting. And then you have a .22 for plinking. That's four guns.
Yeah.
So it sounds like $25 a year per gun, you're looking at $100 per year for the right to own a gun after you've already been licensed, after you've purchased it, all for a fund to alleviate the costs of gun violence. Well, that doesn't sound fair, because what about the person who causes the gun violence, the criminal? They're hitting on the law-abiding citizens to take care of a problem that's not even of their doing.
Yeah.
That seems very unconstitutional.
The journalist actually does a decent job of asking questions about the constitutionality of this and all that kind of good stuff. And here's one of his responses when asked about that. He says, well, a letter will go out to all gun-owning households and say, hey, you got a gun. Here's a lot of services that are available to you: mental health, suicide prevention, domestic violence prevention, gun safety classes, whatever it might be that is evidence-based that shows that we can reduce gun violence. Here's a host of services. And by the way, here's your obligation. You've got to pay a $25 fee. And that's his answer, the answer to the constitutionality of basically violating the Second Amendment. So
run that by one more time.
No, hold on a second. I finally found my other spot here, so don't make me lose it again.
Okay.
It says,
all right. Yeah, keep going. We'll go back.
The person asked the question, you know, about enforcing this. In other words, so you got to pay a fee, you got to have insurance and all that kind of good stuff. So, you know, basically the reporter asks, well, what if somebody just doesn't do it? And so here's what he says. This is the mayor. Encountering people with guns out on the street, in bars and nightclubs, you can imagine a host of different venues where a police officer would really like to have the ability to remove a gun from a potentially combustible situation. For example, there's a bar brawl, and they're patting down everybody, and someone's got a gun. Police officer asks, have you paid your fee? You have insurance. The patron says, no. Now the mayor says, okay, well, there's an opportunity for us to remove the gun. And then when the gun owner comes back and demonstrates that they comply with the law and that they're a lawful gun owner, they get their gun back. But in the meantime, you've taken a gun out of a bar brawl, and that's not a bad thing. So, I mean, this is the lunacy of the left. First of all, they're patting them down after a bar brawl. The bar brawl is already done. Now they're patting people down. Jesus. So bottom line is, I read that and I thought to myself, okay, so if you get pulled over in San Jose for doing a little weaving while you're driving and you get out of the car and it's discovered that you've got a concealed carry license and you're carrying, and what's constitutional about a question about whether or not you paid your fee? Well, have you paid a fee for that gun? No. Okay, hand it over. This is gun confiscation. This is just one of their ways to confiscate guns. So
sounds like an end around.
Yeah, and I think this is the kind of stuff that we have to keep vigilant about, because you know, if somebody doesn't stand up to this. You know, somebody doesn't sue San Jose's ass, you know, it's just going to start to pop. You know, it's like red flag laws when they started. You know, they put them up here. Cities all over the country were enacting red flag laws.
Mm-hmm.
But back to your previous question, well, says that when he asked about the ordinance, he says, well, a letter will go out to all gun-owning households and say, hey, you've got a gun. Here's a lot of services that are available to you: mental health, suicide prevention, domestic violence prevention, gun safety classes, whatever it might be that is evidence-based that shows that we can reduce gun violence. Here's a host of services, and by the way, here's your obligation. You've got to pay a $25 fee. So since you own a gun, you are responsible for helping provide these services, which you probably don't want.
Well, so they're available anyway. For a cost, all those services are available right now.
Yeah.
Except for the domestic violence, that you have to do yourself, but can't go out and get that. But all the other ones, all the counseling, I'm sure that all those, they're all there for a fee for you to use. For the $25 a year, you just can't go in and get counseling if you want. And then, like you said, with the red flag laws, if you go into a psychiatrist and saying, oh, boy, I'm feeling very suicidal. For whatever reason, my wife left me. I'm very down, whatever, my medication's not working. It could be any number of things. You're on a low point in your life and you have a gun, that's when the red flag laws pop up. And then the police will come, the psychiatrist will notify law enforcement that you have a gun, you're having a mental health crisis, and they can knock on your door and then confiscate your guns.
Yep.
And that's happening now in a lot of states throughout the country.
Yep.
It's getting pushed back now, but it did pass and it did happen. All because you had these high school kids who were mentally screwed up and that they were showing signs that they were having mental issues, and that if they had these red flag laws, these politicians who were pushing these red flag laws said that the police could have gone in and confiscated the guns before they had a school shooting. And then everybody said, oh, that is such a good thing because we do not want school shootings. Nobody wants school shootings. And this is one tool in the toolbox that law enforcement can use to end school shootings, and we must go along with it without even thinking.
Yeah.
If it's effective, two, does it violate the Second Amendment, and that where that turning up the hot water a little bit for the little froggy of eventually taking away our Second Amendment rights. Because there are people in this country who do not want people to have guns. They are the Marxists. Yep. They are the communists. And that's all part of a – and they're active here in the United States. They've been active since the 60s, and they want to see our constitutional republic go into a little bit of chaos. Getting rid of the Second Amendment is a big deal of that jigsaw puzzle.
And
this is their way of doing it.
I've talked to this subject. I've got a show coming up Friday night, I'm talking about these Marxists that you're talking about, the psychology behind them and so forth. But I've often said on these kinds of things where you see this kind of rinky-dink little city ordinance, this little end-around on trying to get guns. I mean, it's obviously what's behind it is what you just said, is that they want to get rid of guns. They want to take the guns away from us and stuff. And my comment to them has always been, you know, my comment to the mayor of San Jose is, you know, why don't you put your big boy pants on? You know, why don't you take off your skirt, put your pants on, you know, like your gender actually requires, and repeal the Second Amendment. Just repeal the Second Amendment, dude, and you don't have to worry about it. Then you can take all the guns away. Just repeal the Second Amendment. Go through the work. Roll your sleeves up. Get three-quarters of the states to agree that the Second Amendment needs to go away, and just do it. And quit wasting our fucking time.
Well, they know that
it'll
fail.
Well, of course they do. But you know, that's the whole point, is they're so scared of the Second Amendment, you know, that they've got to go and pull these little rabbits out of their hat, you know. There's 100 different examples every year. They try something new and something different and whatever. But so check into that. I think that's got me concerned. That's got me concerned when a local government like that is what seemingly is going to get away with this kind of malarkey, you know.
Well, I guess a local government can do it. Well. But they would get challenged in court. I guess it doesn't mean that they can't do it until they're challenged. I guess they could.
Well, I mean, okay. Well, I mean, of course it's scary. I mean, what if the city council of San Jose next month passed an ordinance that, anybody that's going to get up and speak at a school board meeting or at a city council meeting has to have this and has to pay a fee. So to exercise your free speech. Oh, if you're a blogger or if you actually host a radio show on Blog Talk Radio, you have to pay a fee. You know, perhaps if it was an attack on the First Amendment, you know, maybe people would push back more. But, I mean, believe me.
But I guess if it's gun, if it's public safety, it's almost as if we the people have been conditioned now between this virus and the masking and all of that leading up to guns. If it has anything to do with public safety, the powers that be know that the people can be easily manipulated in large numbers, given the right formula. And that formula, in my opinion, is public safety. And that once you say public safety, then all bets are off.
Yep. Now, you're right. Okay, buddy. I've worn out my welcome.
Listen to your show. The show will be The Awakening, Losers to the Left of Me.
Yep.
It'll be on the Blog Talk Radio a week from tomorrow, the 11th of February at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
No, this
Friday.
Let me tell
you, your last show was excellent, by the way.
Yeah. Well, it's not a week from today. It's Friday, the 11th.
Right.
Today's
from tomorrow. Right. So that'll be my mistake. No, no. That'll be the 11th February.
No, it's not a week from tomorrow. It's this Friday.
This
Friday. The 7th today. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
The 11th. Okay. All right. You sent me the email. I guess it was.
You're reading the email, but I sent the email 4 days ago.
Oh, well, that would
yeah,
be
so
it.
So it's
February 11th, Friday.
Yeah. Right.
Be
Friday
there or be nowhere.
Central.
Yep. And it's under Blog
yeah.
Talk Radio, Holger 2, The Awakening.
Yep. Yeah.
And I'll put a link into the chat room so everybody can show up and listen in.
Appreciate that, buddy.
Hey, last one was good. I'm glad to see you putting the content out because the way that you laid out last week was very, very good. I can tell you put a lot of work into it. And then you had a specific point you wanted to make and then laid out all the facts and evidence as if you were in a courtroom and very well done, and in an entertaining way to boot.
Yeah, thanks, bud. Well, there's plenty of material, like you can attest to. There's plenty of material out there. So.
Sadly, I wish there was less. I want good material.
I do too. I want to get back to the normal days when we don't have to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
All
yeah,
right. Well, keep up
the
good
condition.
Work there.
I don't think. All right, well, thank you for calling, Holger, and
all right,
we will
you
see
later.
You when we see you. Hit him straight. Well, you can't get out because it's too
right.
cold. You
yeah.
need to come down where it's warm and play some golf.
That's for sure. All right, buddy. Catch you later.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Was Holger. Great call, Holger. Thank you very much. And I will put, a copy of the link for your show this Friday into the chat room. And everybody be there. Support Holger. He does great work. I'd like to say hello to everybody in the chat room. Bigfoot, dogs. Hey, Southern, great to see you. And the Alaskan, always wonderful. Thanks for coming out and listening. Give us a call. Area code 319-527-6706. That's 319-527-6706 because there's a lot going on in the world. We can't possibly get to it all. But give us a call. Let us know what's got you interested because whatever you're interested in, others are interested as well. Now, Holger had mentioned something very interesting as far as the Marxists, what they've come, who they are, what they're doing, why they're doing it, and most importantly, how they're doing it incrementally so we don't feel it. We feel it because we're aware of it, but for society in general, they're getting moved along very incrementally and it's like a little thing, like this thing with the guns in this little town to where you have to pay $25 per gun for these services or else you get your gun taken away. That is an end-around, as Holger rightly said, an end-around to the Second Amendment because we have a fundamental constitutional right to carry guns and to own guns without penalty, without prejudice from the government. Now, there's rules attached to owning a gun. You can't be a felon. If you're a convicted felon, you can't own a gun. You can't own a gun that is fully automatic. You can't own a gun that is semi-automatic. They're trying to put limits on the magazine sizes, which is ridiculous, but they're trying to do that. They don't like the Marxists don't like scary guns, so they're trying to get rid of AR-15s or AK-47s or SKSs because they don't like the look of them because they're scary looking. Shotguns are okay, but you can't have a sawed-off shotgun for, which sadly I don't agree with, but even now there's rules on the book that you can't have a sawed-off shotgun below a certain length. I think it's 18 inches, but I could be wrong. But you can't have a sawed-off shotgun for home defense, which also is a little onerous, but that's another example of the push. But there's a book called Unrestricted Warfare, and it's about the Chinese. We're going to talk about the Chinese because we got the Olympics, which I didn't go to in the sports section. I didn't really talk about it. I'm not really fired up for the Olympics. Our athletes are feeling the pain of the Olympics, not beyond the sport, between the COVID testing and Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, telling athletes, do not do anything to upset the Chinese because they are ruthless. Well, I'm sorry. This is the Olympics, and if they're having it in a fascistic country, which this is a communist country, the athletes should not have to worry about, they should be able to say or do whatever they want while they are competing. They should not be put at jeopardy like some of these reporters that are getting hauled off. There's a story of one reporter getting hauled off because the Chinese government did not like what she was or he was reporting. So with the medal leaders as of 6 p.m. on Sunday, the Russian Olympic Committee. Hey, who knew that was a country? The Russian Olympic Committee is in the last. That's Russia, communist Russia. They're now the Russia Olympic Committee. They have a total of 5 medals. They are in the lead, Norway with 3, Austria with 3, Italy with 3, and Sweden with 2. That is the medal leaders as of right now. But what's fascinating with these Chinese is that everybody is up in arms about the Muslim Uyghurs. The Uyghurs are a sect of Islam that lives in China. They are called the Uyghurs, and they are a marginalized society, as is any other religion in China, whether it be Christians or Jews or Hindus. The Chinese, communist Chinese government does not like organized religion. The Chinese government does not like religion because it is competing with the government of Xi Jinping. Because the government is a god in the eyes of the people. Organized religion takes away that brainwashing element for the communist Chinese, love of country over everything else, whether it be family or religion. So if you are a religious minority, then you're going to be like the Christians in China. They're there, but they can't openly practice their religion. If they do, they're going to get spanked. Now, the Muslim Uyghurs are interesting because what you're not hearing about the Muslim Uyghurs is that they are Muslims. And what do a lot of Muslims do to advance Islam? They commit violent jihad. Well, these Uyghurs were committing violent acts against the Chinese government for reasons to advance the cause of Islam in China, and the boot of the communist Chinese has fallen upon the Uyghurs, and they have been marginalized and put down, put into concentration camps. Some reports are, when I think of a concentration camp, I think of Nazi Germany, and I think of Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen and Buchenwald, where 12 million people were systematically murdered, tortured, burned, destroyed. I don't think that's the case in China. I think the concentration camps, I think they're using that word wrongly. They're put under concentration. They're put under government surveillance. They're put under the thumb of the government. Well, that's what happens when you live in China and especially if you go against the Chinese government and commit jihad acts, it's going to come down hard on you, as opposed to here in the United States. Excuse me. Whereas here in the United States, if you commit jihad, likely they're going to say that you have a mental illness. Well, we got another caller. Let's put him on. Hello there. Welcome.
Hey, thank you very.
Yes.
Hey, yeah. Thank you very much for taking my call. I very much appreciate it. How are you?
What's your name?
Yeah, my name is Bobby.
Hey, Bobby. What's on your mind?
Hey. Okay, so let me tell you where I agree with you and then where I disagree. And I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm just assuming that you're probably going to agree with me on these things. If you study how Islam was advanced throughout the world, right, they forced people, you know, they killed people who were a different religion, tortured them, raped women, and they claimed they were infidels. And when they weren't doing horrible things like these things, they were taxing them. And then, of course, when you take the polling, you check the polling of what they think today, lots of them have very questionable takes on when it comes to stuff that has to do with the world today. There's lots of polling on this over the last few years or whatever. Of course, a lot of extremism out there, the terrorists are Muslim. And last but not least, in their own countries, you know how they treat minorities. So before I continue, have I shown you that I'm not some left-wing loon who's in denial?
Well, you've shown me by what you said that you are familiar and knowledgeable in Islamic doctrine and theology and history. So
okay.
You get A-plus up until now.
Okay.
I agree with everything
fair
you
enough.
Said.
I figured you would. Now, here's where I disagree. I'm for the truth, okay? I don't chain myself to one side because I want to go by facts. That's why I'm able to recognize how Muslims historically have been. And for everyone listening, I know most Muslims are good people. I'm referring to a minority, but it's a large minority when you go through the history of the world. The part that I don't like is when people are contradicting themselves. The contradiction you have are two things that you're doing. I'll give you one at a time to give you a chance to follow up. The first thing, you will recognize the horrors of how Muslims have done historically and today, but you don't point the same finger at Christians. Why is that?
Okay, you kind of lost me a little bit. Maybe if you can ask the question a little more clearly.
What I mean is, based on what you've shown in your program, I'm not an expert on your program, but based on what you've shown, it does seem like you are more willing to point the finger at Muslims, but not equally point the finger at Christians when it comes to their history then.
That's not true. Why would you say that?
Whenever I pass by your show on Blog Talk Radio and I go by your titles
mm-hmm.
and then I open it up and listen to you for a little while, I acknowledge I'm not an expert on your program. I'm acknowledging that. But based on what I've researched,
mm-hmm.
it does seem like the pattern usually is to point it at the Muslims, which I understand why you do that, but you don't equally show the audience, hey, historically, Christians and Muslims have both done horrible things on a similar level.
Well, let me correct you. Now I understand where you're coming from. As a general rule on our show, this show tonight, we have six others, as you know, during the week with six other hosts who have their own shows. But on Vito and ours, we focus on current events. And a lot of times there are, every week, in Nigeria, for example, there's followers of Islam that are killing Nigerian Christians. There are Islamic attacks throughout the country. Now, when you put it in totality, at least once a week, there's always something to report on that are involving the followers of Islam. That would be correct, and I could see where you would have that, you would come to the conclusion that you did. Now, usually where people will go with the Christians, and correct me if I'm wrong, would be the Crusades. Now, the Crusades, there was a lot of violence from the Christian Crusaders. Would you say that that's a good example?
No. The reason you said correct you if I'm wrong, you're wrong. So you're right. People do what you say. They'll go to the Crusades. But that's not where it ends. when they point to how, for example, with Muslims, when they point to how Islam was spread by the sword, it was forced on people, or they were pressuring people to convert and things like that, even though they acknowledge that there were good Muslims who were peacefully trying to go around the world showing people Islam, they were also showing people there was a violent side. When people point that out, usually the fair people will say Christians did those kind of things historically too. And one of the best examples you'll get is if you look at the entire world, which two groups are the largest number in population for religious groups?
Well,
Christians and Muslims around the world.
All right, well, give me some examples of Christian jihad.
But remember, it doesn't have to be jihad only. It could be pressure.
No, I'm using that as a word because you're saying that the Christians are equal. You're trying to show that Christians are equally as violent and why we don't talk about it. So give me a couple examples of where – not even
sure, –
forget historically. Let's just go the last 100 years.
Okay, no. If you're going last 100 years, the comparison wouldn't be fair then. Muslims have been probably worse than Christians. But having said that, if you want to be fair, I'm for the truth now, it's a lot easier not to force people to convert and rape them and torture them and do all these horrible things when you're in a country where you've got lots of land, lots of money, lots of resources, and things like that. So, for example, being in Africa is not the same as being in New York.
All right. Well, my answer to you on that point, which is a good point, is something called a reformation. The Christians had a reformation as well as the Jews, and they've had a reformation, which means that the books, the religious books, are not taken literally, and they have modernity has taken precedence over ancient, what's literally in the books. Now, Islam, as you may or may not know, but I'll tell you, there is no innovation after the third caliph. It's called ijtihad. The doors to ijtihad were closed after the third caliph. Now, what that means is that within Islam, there is no innovation, change, or anything to the original Quran. Now, the Quran, to be a follower of Islam, let me finish. The Quran is seen by followers of Islam is the exact word of Allah down to the last letter. So it cannot be improved upon, and if it is, then you are putting yourself above Allah, which carries a death sentence in a lot of cases in Sharia-compliant countries, not necessarily here in the United States.
Okay.
So that is the big difference.
Yes. Two things. So we both agreed today it's different. Christians and Muslims are not on the same level today. They're different. So we agree there. Where we don't agree are two things we are not considering. For example, when you point to horrible things being done in Africa by Muslims, and we acknowledge those things happen, it's a little bit unfair because think of it like this. Suppose the Pakistanis invaded America, right? And they took over, much like the people from the United Kingdom came to America hundreds of years ago or wherever they came from. So Pakistanis came to America. They took away all the Americans that are here right now. They took them out, or they made them a minority. They took American land. They took American resources, and they basically took over America. And then imagine 200 years went by. Now they're in the majority. They got the land. They got the resources. They got the power. You wouldn't like it if a Pakistani 200 years later said to you, hey, man, we Pakistanis are great. We're not like the other people around the world, because it's easy for them to say that now that they got what they want. The second thing
you're hypothetical. Hold on. Your hypothetical is ridiculous.
I didn't get to finish, but okay, go ahead.
It's a non sequitur.
But the hypothetical happened. A lot of these European countries are rich. Liechtenstein, Maldonado, America, Canada, they got the land, the resources, the money, and they're in the majority. So it's easy for them to be in a good mood. What would happen if the Christians became a minority?
That could happen. If Christianity doesn't keep up, they could be in the minority.
Okay, but if
nothing
Christians...
Nothing says that it's etched in stone Agreed. But as far as the wealth of countries, you have to look at the type of government also. If Saudi Arabia didn't have oil, they would be poor.
Right. That's where we agree. On those parts, we agree. If Germany, if Liechtenstein, if Canada, if America, predominantly Christian nations, if they were slowly and slowly becoming less and less and less, 70%, 60%, 50%, 40%, and then they had a rival like, not Hindus, Hindus are pretty peaceful, let's say their rival was Muslims or some other group that they may feel be those rivalry, then we'll find out what would happen at that point. So let me ask you a common sense question. It's a very common sense question. If Christians were becoming an actual minority, slowly by slowly in European lands and America and Canada, do you think they would still be as peaceful as they are now?
I don't know.
You should know the answer.
How's that for an answer? I don't know.
You should know because you can go by history. History shows the two groups of people who fight the most in the name of religion are Muslims and Christians. There's no reason to think they'll be different because it's 2022.
No, actually you're wrong because the two people that fight more in the name of religion are the Sunnis and the Shia, because over the last 1,400 years, the Sunnis and the Shias have killed more Muslims than any other group and under the historical record, whether it be in the modern day, whether it be Israel or any other enemies of Islam or the United States. That is a fact that cannot be denied or debated.
Well, first of all, Sunni and Shia, they're both Muslim to me, so they consider themselves Muslim. But if you're going to branches.
They've been fighting, killing, and torturing each other for 1,400 years.
How long do you think Christians were fighting with each other? You think they just stopped last year?
I'm telling you, you made the comment about Christians. This is going back. Well, I'm telling you that the two religions that have been killing each other more than Christians and Muslims are Muslims and Muslims, and that's the Shia Sunni.
You say that's a fact.
And that's a fact.
So since you say it's a fact and it's indisputable, can you show me the study that shows that's a fact?
I can tell you because it started with the Riddle Wars 1,400 years ago. And it's going on today, and it hasn't stopped.
It is going on today. But if you look at the whole world, the two biggest groups in the world are Christians and Muslims. Do you think that they all went around the world saying, hey, everyone, would you like to convert? And everyone said, sure.
You're missing the whole point.
In Indonesia, in Japan, in Burma, in all these countries, when Christianity and Islam spreads, do you think the majority of them were missionaries who said, hey, everyone, we have a religion peacefully. Would you like to convert?
What I told you, and that you're not taking into account, and I say this respectfully, is that Christianity had a reformation.
I know that, but we're not talking about that.
We are talking about that.
No,
Christianity had a reformation. Islam didn't, so your point is moot. One of the people in the chat room has a question for you.
He said,
ask
that's
him
not, you're
if
being,
he
you're,
thinks
you're not
mainstream.
You're not being fair. You're not being fair to me. You're not
I'm
having
ask,
any debate.
I'm trying to ask you a question.
Can I follow up to what you said when you were talking?
We're running out of time, and I don't know what your main point is.
You said to me Sunnis and Shiites factually have done – I'm not putting words in your mouth. You said factually they've done the most. I asked you for a study. You don't have a study. And then I showed you the numbers that Christians and Muslims are the most throughout the world. If you pick up a history book, don't believe me, pick up a history book on how Islam and Christianity was spread, you should know that many times throughout the world, it was not peaceful, and you're going to sit here and say Christians had a reformation and Sunnis and Shiites are factually the worst. That's
ridiculous. I never said it wasn't peaceful. The Crusade. No, I'm not making things up. I told you about the Crusades. You don't want to talk about
that
the Crusades,
one.
But after
that, was one.
Since then, within the last 100 years, you couldn't give me any examples, and I'm trying to tell you that the Sunni Muslims and the Shia Muslims have been killing each other in greater numbers than the Christians and the Muslims, the Jews and the Muslims.
You totally ignored what I said. You're not even understanding what I'm saying.
And the Muslims. Well, no, because
you're
not really making sense.
You ignored what I said.
I'm not ignoring you. I'm not ignoring you. I tried to answer. We didn't see eye to eye on it. That's all.
No, just let it go.
It's
not an opinion. I'm not debating you the last 100 years. I told you I agreed with you in the last 100 years. I'm saying historically, it's not just the Crusades. There's way more than that. You're just focusing on the Crusades and going, I told you the Crusades.
Okay.
I think there's nothing else.
All right. One of the listeners has a question for you.
All right. Okay.
And here it is. Ask him if he thinks mainstream media covers this the same way. And that's Hank is asking you that question.
It depends
Hank
on
Jones,
what part
who
of the
has
media.
A very, he has a very good show, too. You should probably listen to that if you like politics and sports.
In fact, not only do I like politics and sports, I actually have a very popular page, which I welcome you to come on, and I will give you plenty of time. I won't hang up on you in a few minutes or just duck and dodge. Would you like to come on my show, man? I've got over 36 million hits if you'd like to come on.
You can promote it. That's fine.
Okay.
If you want.
Do you take sports topics as well? I got a great sports topic for you.
Well, no. I'm just saying Hank Jones has a great sports and politics show.
Oh.
I asked you, do you like sports and politics? And
yeah.
Then it turned into
yeah.
something else.
Yeah, no, I do. I got a great sports thought. I actually got some, before you hang up on me, I got some great topics for you to consider.
I'm not
going to
hang
up.
If I was going to hang up on you, I'd have done it a long time ago because you're not an easy person to talk to.
No, what I meant was when you do eventually hang up, and I think I've been very easy with you. I think it got a little bad between us. I think only it was fine in the beginning. I think a little towards the end when you were saying, let me finish, and I waited for you, but you didn't do it for me, and then you wanted to go to the guy in the chat room. I think it was like you were not being fair. You were not letting me finish then. And you also, you didn't take what I said right. Like, for example, when you said, I told you about the last 100 years, as if I disagreed with you. I agree with you about the last 100 years. And you said to me, I told you about the Crusades. I agree with you there, too. We're not disagreeing on those topics. But there was more than the last 100 years, and there's more than the Crusades.
Right. And you said that the Christians and Muslims have been and the Christianity was not spread peacefully. That is true. There's
not
no question about it.
Right.
Not
right.
always.
So,
it has some dark Christianity has some very dark times, as well as other organized religions have very dark times. But like I said, the Reformation as imperfect as it is. Kind of change things.
So let me ask you
now. The only religion that has not had a major reformation, major religion, between the big three, which would be Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, the only one that hasn't had the major reformation yet is Islam, and I explained to you why, because of the ijtihad. So,
right, but the Christians will also say to you, you know they'll say, hey,
okay,
I take some. Not all Christians say this, but some will say, "Look, I take the Bible as it is written. If you're denying what's in the Bible, then you're acting like you're higher than the Bible, and you should go by what's written in the Bible." There's a difference between a citizen in Saudi Arabia versus a citizen in Germany. They're two different countries. If the Christians were in the Middle East and in those type of countries, and the Muslims were in Europe. What do you think would happen at that point? You can't just focus on just the religion in the last 100 years. You got to go by everything.
You're looking at a hypothetical, and the Muslims were in Europe. Luckily, they got stopped at the Battle of Tours. Thank God. No pun intended.
Well, it's a hypothetical, but there's some truth there.
All right, well, be that as it may, I don't mean to cut you short. Wait, hold on. I don't mean to cut you short.
Yeah.
We only have 10 minutes left.
Okay.
So if you could plug your show, I'm sure that other people listening would probably like to maybe call
sure.
in and
sure.
Have
I, no,
a
I appreciate that. Okay, so that's very nice of you. I appreciate that. Okay, so to make it simple, I actually have multiple pages on YouTube. So the easiest to make it faster, practical, and all that, just go on YouTube, type in Michael Jordan fans are the worst NBA fans in, and you should be able to find my page. If anybody wants to go on my program in general, please send me an
What's
email.
What's your program?
Including you.
What's your radio program you want me to – is that on Blog Talk too?
No. So, like I said, I have multiple YouTube pages. There's just different
topics. What's the name of your radio? What's the name of your radio program?
It's not a radio program. It's on YouTube.
What's the name of the program?
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's more than one page. It's not one program. Telling you the truth.
All right, we'll look for Michael Jordan is whatever the worst
Michael
basketball
Jordan
player
fans
is.
Are the Michael Jordan fans are the worst NBA fans. And are you a Michael Jordan fan?
I am.
You don't mind me asking?
No, I am. I lived in Chicago. I love Michael Jordan. Class act.
Anyway, I'm not surprised.
Be that as it may, I hope that you call back on one of the other shows on our network, or give us a call back next Monday, and then have a topic on hand, and we can discuss that in great detail. But I enjoyed with you, and that was a great call. Thank you.
Thank you. By the way, remember I said before you hang up, can I give you some topics for the future? Do you want them or no?
I really don't have time right now because I want to get to that Schweitzer article really badly, and I've only got a few minutes to do it.
Sure. No, thank you for giving me a chance. I appreciate it. Have a nice time. Stay safe.
All right.
And you're welcome to come
Inshallah,
on my program.
Inshallah,
my
friend. Inshallah. Bye-bye.
God be with you. And you're welcome on my program if you like, just so you know.
Well, thank you very much for the invite. I appreciate that.
Thank you. You too.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Okay. Now, this guy, Peter Schweitzer, put out an article where he exposes politicians' ties to China from the left and the right. And what makes this article so interesting is that he names names. Now, this is in the American Thinker. It was February 5th. The name of the article, Schweitzer Hits Another Home Run on Biden-China Corruption. Now, Peter Schweitzer, he's an Oxford grad, and he wrote a book. The book is usual fare. It's based on well-documented research, financial records that support the author's assertion. In other words, he presents all the facts and evidence that you would need. Now, his book focuses on the Chinese communist connections for good reason, because China has set about a long-term effort to compromise the political, business, culture, academic, and scientific elements of America, is set up for creating global Chinese hegemony, control, and dominance. That means China wants to control the world. The Chinese have accomplished a great deal in the decades since the ill-begotten Kissinger-Nixon opening to China in 1972. They followed by the Clinton-Bush acquiescence to China's admission to the WTA, World Trade Association, that was finalized with favored status in 2001. Through these decades, the wolf, bear, coyote, China has gradually expanded its dominance of the world trade and economics by stealing intellectual property, using bribes and influence purchasing and standard espionage and propaganda methods. The truth that you know that is true is that after that plane, the very multi-million-dollar plane went off the carrier in the China Sea, China didn't care about recovery. Normally they would have said, oh, that was in our waters. We're going to recover the American aircraft, the stealth aircraft. They didn't really care because they have already stolen all the secrets from us and have built their own. So if you deny that, just look at that as a fact. So Schweitzer had a big scandal to investigate with a good team of researchers to help him organize the expose, and the expose warns that short-term and long-term danger for the survival of Western nations and the ascendancy of a savage and murderous Chinese communist tyrannical autocracy stained by a history of ethnic, religious, and domestic pogroms, persecutions, and genocide of immense and barbaric proportions that are numerous and stunning, extending forward from the millions of deaths of Mao's Cultural Revolution and the Great Leap Forward that resulted in the deaths of millions of Chinese from starvation and systemic political purges to modern-day activities that subjugate Tibet, Hong Kong, domestic religious minorities while pursuing external influence and dominance. And all that is true, and all that is against our constitutional republic. The essence and the heart of our Constitution, Chinese are our enemies. Now, under new leadership, Schweitzer goes on, China continues to commit atrocities domestically and expand its influences in foreign political and economic matters. This raises the question, how do the compromised oligarchs of the West who are ensnared in the Chinese web of influence sleep at night or excuse their complicity? Is money enough to justify complicity with barbaric malevolence? When does the complicity become the role of accessory to crimes ranging all the way to treason? Excuse me. With the foregoing in mind, best review is let's name names. How American core concepts can be compromised with cheap talk and promises. Brutality can dominate civility. Culture can be eviscerated by aggressive activists. Advocacy of Marxist nonsense. The key, though, is the complicity of American citizens. Vice, infidelity, and treachery. A chapter on the evil and corrupt Biden family and its selling out to worldwide opportunities for corruption, but particularly Chinese influence peddling of their decadence and depravity. A wearing and maddening description of the corruption and pandering, grifting, and shilling by the denizens of Capitol Hill, meaning the Feinstein and family, Swalwell with Feng Feng, you remember her. He's on the Intelligence Committee, and he was sleeping with the Chinese spy Feng Feng. Nothing happened to him. Pelosi and family, McConnell and Chow, that's our Republican McConnell, and his wife Elaine Chow, former congresspeople like Senators Boehner, Lott, Breaux, Baucus, and of course a long list of congressmen, also from both sides of the aisle, all selling their souls and positions of trust, which is part of degradation and degeneration. The culture of power and money, lust of the American corporate community and its major players, BlackRock, Goldman Sachs, Bridgewater, Google, Microsoft, Intel, Twitter, and Elon Musk, which I don't agree with, and of course Bill Gates, that draws them to a plutocracy that would never hesitate to betray America for financial advantage or an opportunity to be part of a global powerhouse oligarchy, complicit with and colluding with malefactor government tyrannies, which is China through avarice, sex, and rapaciousness. This goes on. He sets aside a chapter for the Bush, George Bush and family, Trudeau families who have been served by their association with China, academia, for sure, Chinese students in America. You have to understand that any Chinese person with family back home in China living in the United States, if Xi Jinping calls on that person to spy for China, they will have to, or their family will be threatened. So technically, every Chinese citizen here in the United States is a potential spy to the United States. Oh, we got less than a minute and a half. He saves the last chapter for a grand summary and proposal to reverse the corruption. So there you have it. Read this article in the American Thinker. Schweitzer hits home another home run on the Biden-China corruption because he names names, which is so rare. We hear about the problems, but now he's naming names. So that is fantastic. So kudos to Mr. Schweitzer, and thank you for your work putting this out. So be sure to listen to Holger on Friday at 7 p.m. because his show is great, and Holger, thank good call. Donnie, I guess, with your I Hate Michael Jordan show, thank you for your interesting call. We didn't really get anywhere. I don't know where you were headed, but who cares? It was an interesting call nonetheless. I want to thank everybody for listening. God bless America, and God bless our troops. Say a prayer for our law enforcement officers and keep them safe, because the hatred towards law enforcement is large, and these people need our respect. See a cop, thank them. See a military man, thank them for their service. God bless America. We will see you next Monday. Adios, amigos. All right, everybody, thank you for listening. Have a great and safe week. Sue, love you. Thank you very much for your help, as always. And have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.